body, where the nutrition always exceeds the toxins. Now, what happens in disease is that the toxins have started to exceed the nutrition in the body. That is when disease spreads. So that is why cleansing is so important. That is why in Ayurveda we are always concerned with perspiration, urination and defecation at the physical level. It's important, you know, nobody talks about cleansing. Everybody is only talking about nutrition. But we say, you know, we give the example of a glass which has to be empty and clean for the water that is poured into the glass to be clean. The glass can be empty but dirty. The water poured into it becomes dirty. If the glass has got a little bit of dirty water, whatever is poured in also becomes dirty. So always we need to be empty and clean. It's not enough to be just empty or just clean. Both are required. And that is why cleansing has so much of importance. We have to cleanse on a daily basis. Sometimes on a monthly basis, we need to go in for a stronger cleanse. You know, 30, 40 years back, I think castor oil was common here also. Now castor oil is banned by the medical community, I believe.
Banned? I mean, internal maybe? I mean,
for internal use, they don't recommend castor oil anymore.
Yeah, they recommend it, but it's not banned though. I mean, people.
Well, banned in the sense that they don't recommend. The medical community does not recommend it anymore.
If you look at a lot of castor oil bottles in the U.S., it says not for internal use.
Not for internal use.
It's for castor oil.
So it's a suggestion.
Externally, but most will say, do not use.
Do not use it.
Why is that?
Well, science always finds some reason. Western medicine always finds some reason.
Right. Pharma.
To reject.
They banned it because it actually works. That's my observation.
Do you know the story of Colgate toothpaste? Colgate toothpaste in India came 100 years back saying coal and salt is not good for the tooth. So use Colgate toothpaste. 100 years later, their advertisement says, our toothpaste contains coal and salt. It is excellent for the teeth.
Wow.
So now they actually have charcoal toothbrushes. They actually have charcoal toothbrushes and the toothpaste contains salt today. So, you know, that's, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Interrupt your thought.
Yeah, so we'll just complete this. What I was trying to say is Western medicine keeps changing. Every 20 years, every 30 years, the thoughts keep changing. Cholesterol was bad till 6 months back.
Yeah.
Now, research is coming up showing that cholesterol is really not as bad as it has been made out to be. Many a time, when we take extreme positions, we are forced to retract on our thoughts. Because there can never be extreme positions. We always need to follow the middle path. We always need to talk about moderation in everything. Whenever you follow the path of moderation, you will generally be doing well for yourself. I think that's something we need to be very, very clear about. Extreme positions, which is what Western medicine has taken over the years, many a time they have been forced to go back. Many a time. In the 80s, everybody was made to have calcium. Calcium tablets, calcium Sandoz, I think that was a big company then. Everybody was having calcium. And all those who had calcium for 10, 20 years, in the last 10 years, many of them have developed huge calcium deposits. Mm-hmm. And they are actually being taken out of the system, the calcium. Like this, there are umpteen incidents. I'm not saying Western medicine is all bad. There is a place, definitely there is a place where Western medicine is required. But we have to be judicious. We have to think where we want to use it. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm curious if you could talk a little bit about disease of the mind.
Yeah.
Being a psychologist, I feel like what I work with daily, but also struggle with, maybe daily more so than the body, And you could talk a little bit. I know it's all connected, but...
Before you answer that question, I actually have that same kind of a question. I meet very exposed to people. If you don't do exactly what they want, they yell at you and try to bully you into doing it, or they yell at you so much that you do it just to please them, and then you feel resentful and frustrated and angry.
Okay. Yeah, it's a vast subject, because Ayurveda says all diseases start in the mind. And when we even start, the teachers who wrote the Ayurveda text, their very first line is that Ayurveda describes for diseases starting with disease of the mind. And almost all diseases, we say, start in the mind and spread to the body. For us, diseases are not just the more complicated diseases. Even normal human emotions, anger, grief, hatred, jealousy, guilt, fear, all of this continuing over a period of time, built up in the system, starts creating physical health issues. As is in Chinese medicine also, for those of you who are familiar with Chinese medicine. Now, we will try to understand a little more, in the sense that we make a distinction between who you are and who your ego is. We make a big distinction, and we say the ego is in our life. You know, when you play a game, there's always a opponent. You know, any game, there is always somebody who creates hurdles for you. The ego is that hurdle in your life. So you feel there's a situation in your life, you feel angry, that comes from you, genuine. That anger is held on to for 20 years, that comes from your ego. A normal response to a situation, maybe anger or grief, that is you. But if you are staying with that anger or grief or emotion for many, many hours or days or weeks or months or years, that is your ego. You get that. And that is what starts creating physical health issues over a period of time, and even mental health issues, depending on the type of emotion that you are holding on to, how complicated those emotions get. Determine whether it is going to affect the mind, the channels of the mind, or whether it is going to affect the channels of the body. So Ayurveda keeps telling us that even at the level of the mind, we need to do cleansing and nourishing every day. It's not only at the level of the body, but at the level of the mind also, we need to find ways to delete thoughts, delete, you know, whatever bad has happened. And then refill, nourish the mind. That is where, again, practices come into play. You know, whatever practices you have, any form of practice, you know, it can be positive affirmations, it can be being in silence. You know, being in silence, chanting, satsang. Satsang, you know, she talked about satsang at the beginning of the session. Satsang means being in a group where there is positive discussions, positive energy. That is great for the mind. Many a time, being in a group where there is a lot of positive thought, positive learnings, positive discussions. You know, we could be sitting here and gossiping about how, you know, about the big bad world and what all that is going wrong. You know, America has been discussing a lot of things for the last 6 months. So, you know, we could keep thinking about all the wrong things that are happening in our life, but there's a lot of good things that are happening. And it's important that we are most of the time in a group where good thoughts, good ideas, good suggestions, laughter, all of this is happening. We don't realize the influence of the negative discussions in our life. We don't realize it. You know, we like to intellectualize and talk about all the wrong things that are happening, the really bad things that are happening. You know, I was in Thailand last week doing a workshop, and there was this young professor from a college there, very smart, and she was feeling very strongly about, you know, a lot of global issues. And she was also in a very, you know, strong depression. And she doesn't connect the two. The level of negativity and the negative thought process that has taken over has started making her feel very low. And she just couldn't connect the two. It took you know, 3-4 days of talking. She's not able to connect this negative thought process with the depression that she's gone into. And this happens to a lot of people. We don't realize what is happening to us. We don't realize that on one side we are feeding ourselves with a lot of negativity. You watch television, you go on internet, you go on any media, there's a lot of negativity that is bombarding us. And on the other side, we're not engaging sufficiently in practices that will protect us against this negativity. So cleansing and nourishing has to happen at the mind level also. Otherwise, over a period of time, we will keep slipping and slipping and slipping. Another big issue we have today is that we don't store anything in our mind. Everything is stored on the telephone or hard computer, or, you know, the memory function. There are many functions for the mind. The memory function is completely not used. Now, this is one big reason for long-term dementia, Alzheimer's, etc. Because we just don't seem to be using our own faculties. We can't remember anything anymore, you know.
I've heard studies say that exercise is more important to the mind than any of those games, memory games, and that it's very important to exercise. It's a circulation that goes through your body and through your brain that's more important than any of those mind games, memory games, because at some point, if you play the same games or you keep learning new things, even though we talk about neuroplasticity and building those brain cells, it really doesn't do as much. If you look at older people, they walk slow, and if they would walk faster, these are studies that I've read. I don't know if we need any.
Like I said, studies keep changing.
Yes.
But all that I'm saying is, you know, we need to store. You know, if you have a facility, a faculty which is not being used, it becomes rusted. I'm not talking about games at all. I'm talking about real life. Today, I don't remember anything. You know, almost everything, I have to refer my phone, telephone numbers, addresses. Does anybody know addresses anymore? 20 years back when I came to New York, the taxi driver drove very easily without a GPS. Mm-hmm. Now they don't know. We are losing, and not only they, we also. We have lost the ability to remember. And that's a huge issue when it comes to long-term health issues.
I think the biggest thing we've lost is the ability to connect, to communicate. Sorry.
I think those things are connected. It's funny, I just interrupted because I was just thinking that the issue of connection is very much connected with memory, because the emotional, our memory is not just the mental function, but we remember in relationship and as we connect. And that's what they show, obviously, like with music and Alzheimer's, you know, it's like the connection.
Yes.
The connection is, you
just see older people sitting on stage. But I don't see any young people sitting on stoops, playing stickball, hanging out. You know, their mothers take them to some gym, to something, and then they take them back, and then they take them to another activity, and they have these play dates for 45 minutes, and then they take them away. It's just like, too much stress just to get to a play.
So why do that?
To make them well-rounded, I think, is what the goal is for the parents.
But again, you know, that's why we talk about four principles of too little, too much, wrong application, and balanced use. Most of the time, we are in the space of too little, too much, or wrong application, wrong use. You know, if too little of a good thing, many a time we don't take enough of what we need. Many a time we take too much of what we need, making it also useless.
Or poisonous.
Or poisonous. Sometimes we render something useless by the wrong application. For example, honey is great. I'm just giving one example. Honey is very therapeutic. But many a time we render it useless by taking it in hot water. Honey, when it is taken in hot water, it does not digest well. So it's a wrong use or a wrong application. These are the three that happen to us most of the time. Too little, too much, or wrong application. Balanced, moderate use is rarely happening. And this happens with everything, even exercise, with everything. Too much of exercise, many a time we do. Wrong application of exercise is when we exercise late in the evening. We exercise late in the evening, it naturally leads to loss of sleep over a period of time. Immediately we might sleep because of the exhaustion. But over a period of time, the exercise in the evening creates a lot of dryness in the system, and that dryness will not allow one to sleep, creating the condition called insomnia. And today, I believe 40% of Americans have got insomnia. Generally, after sunset, our activity level has to slow down. Whether it is physical activity, whether it is mind activity, it has to slow down. You know, once in a while, it's okay. But every day, if one is engaged in too much of activity after sunset, in an ideal scenario, you would be eating your dinner by sunset and you would be giving yourself 3 to 4 hours to digest the food before you go to bed. In an ideal scenario. Now, you know, you will have to work it out according to your situation. So, any work, any exercise, people do business late into the night today. Decision making should ideally be in the early part of the day, not in the late part of the night. So there are a lot of things that we regain at the mind level also going against nature. You know, we Ayurveda will very clearly talk about the first half of the day being the most creative part, the most the part of the day when you can really study well. Now here I will quote science, and you know, just as Ayurveda says that early morning is the time when children should be studying, that's the time when you absorb the best. And science has also proven that the quantum of absorption early in the morning is double that which is studied late in the night. You know, you sleep and wake up, your capacity to understand and remember is far higher than it is late in the night. But where do children study in the morning anymore? They're all studying late in the night. So a lot of things are against the rhythm of nature, and that is creating a lot of stress. Now, you talk about senior citizens. Again, if you go back 40 years, the children were brought up by the grandparents. The grandparents were the ones who shared their wisdom, their experience, and brought up the children in a balanced way. The parents, because how do young people know to bring up children. Those who are in the 20s, they would hardly know how to bring up children. It is the grandparents who brought up the children. So the children were brought up in a very balanced way. Today, nobody has time for grandparents. And it was a mutually beneficial relationship. Children gave enthusiasm and energy to the grandparents. And grandparents shared all their wisdom and experience with the children. It was a mutually beneficial. So again, the mind was being strengthened. In Ayurveda, when we talk about the mind, we are constantly talking about three things that need to be done with the mind always. One is developing the discriminating intellect, learning to be appropriate, learning, knowing what is appropriate and what is not appropriate. That ability to discriminate, standing as a witness to a situation, not being in the situation. Because in a situation, we are always prejudiced, we are always biased. So the art of discrimination by taking myself out of the situation, that is one thing that we need to develop. The second is the willpower, the determination, the conviction to stay with a practice, with an intention. You know, once you set an intention, nothing should deter you from achieving that. You need to develop that willpower. And the third is, continuous learning is important. You know, I spoke earlier about the difference between you and your ego. If you are able to see this distinction between you and your ego, then there is a need to constantly learn more and more about yourself. These three are very important to keep the mind healthy. The discriminating intellect, the willpower, determination, conviction, and the learning about yourself.
Is there a male and female energy too? Like in other places, they talk about the male and the female.
Yes. We have that. See, balancing the male and female energy is a much higher practice. You know, one can work towards it, but that takes a much longer time. All of this contributes to that. Because that is where we are talking about, you know, the Ida, there are some nadis, some channels that we talk about, the male channel, the female channel. Balancing that, balancing the flow of energy between these channels. You know, if you look at any point of time, you will be breathing only through one nostril. And there's a rhythm to it. Even that has a rhythm. I don't know whether you have noticed it. From morning sunrise, every 48 minutes, the breath moves to the alternate nostril.
What?
From morning sunrise. So if you start with the left nostril at sunrise, you're breathing through the left nostril at sunrise. After 48 minutes to an hour, let's say 48 minutes to an hour, you move to the right nostril. And then again you move to the left nostril after an hour. And again to the right. It keeps alternating. Now this is in the period when the moon is waxing. The next 14 days when the moon is waning, it would again be the opposite side. The right nostril would start first and then the left and then the right and then the left. So there is a rhythm to the breathing pattern also till you achieve that balance and both nostrils are breathing. But that is a much, much higher practice. Now through this breathing, we can also know what is going right or what is going wrong. Suppose the breathing is not happening in a rhythmic way, that also is an indicator of something going wrong in the system. So, it is there, but we don't look at it on a normal plane because that's a much higher level. Ayurveda goes extensively further into the mind. It talks about three states of mind. It talks about the pure, creative, ideating state of mind. The second state is the aggressive, agitated, action state of mind. The third is the restful state when it is normal, and when it is aggravated, it is the depressed, lethargic indolent, lazy state of mind. So you have three states. One state that ideates, second stage that acts, and the third state that stops. In a balanced mind, all three will be functioning. So you know when to work, you know when to stop, you get the idea, you act on it, all of this will happen. But unfortunately for most of us, the ideating state is not working enough. Most of the time we are in the agitated or aggressive state or the depressed lethargic state of mind, most of the time.
What was the first
state? The pure, harmonious, balanced, creative, ideating state of mind. Uh-huh. Where you get ideas, where you are relaxed, you are at peace with yourself, you are happy. That is the first state of mind. But for most of us, we are going through the other two states. In a day, we spend a lot of time either agitating or being depressed. And that is because we are living in the past or the future. The peaceful state of mind happens when we are living in the present, when we are in the moment. The other two states are linked to the past or the future. And that is again a reason why we need practices. Whenever you are engaged in practices, you are gradually working your mind to spend more and more time in the peaceful, harmonious, balanced state of mind.
So Dr. Ramkumar, since you're your yoga teacher, so he's talking about the Rajasthamas and Sattva state, when he outlines the three stages, right? So what are some practical tips? Because, those are things to be aware of, these states. But when somebody is uncertain, like that denseness, or the activity and the kind of doing state, like what are some practical tips you can share with people that can help them shift it on their own in this way?
One is get into a routine. What we were talking about right at the beginning is get into a practice, get into a routine. We need to spend 70 to 80% of our time in a rhythm, in a routine. 20%, 30%, yes, there may be exceptions, there may be Saturday night parties, whatever it is, that's fine. But 70 to 80%, we need to be in a routine for the body and for the mind. If we do that, then we are prepared for such situations. When the mind is getting agitated, we have trained ourselves to actually see that agitated mind. And when we have trained ourselves to see that agitated mind, we are able to quickly go back. We quickly go back to positive affirmations. We quickly go back to whatever, works for us. Many a time we tell patients to put up these positive affirmations on their computer screen. Earlier it was posters. Now, nobody sees posters. Everybody sees mobile phones and computer screens. So we tell them to put it up on their computer screens and everything. So whenever they're agitated or depressed, they learn to recognize it. The first step is to recognize it. We don't recognize it. The depressed mind will never accept that it is depressed. It takes a lot of time for the mind to accept that it is depressed or aggressive, agitated also, or bipolar. It's very difficult to accept these conditions. And so to recognize it is why we do the practice over a period of time. And then once we begin to recognize it, then immediate action would be, for example, positive affirmations, which you can see. Or you develop a close friend or somebody who can shake you out of that state. You have already told that person knows that this is what is happening. So every time you go into such a situation, that friend is there to shake you out of it. Satsang is very important, I think. Being in good company is extremely important when you are going through these situations. Most of us today, our relationships are very stressful, are very chaotic. And the relationships themselves suck a lot out of us. we need to find a way that the relationships are actually enriching and fulfilling rather than draining and, you know, exhausting us. And we need to have a few such good relationships. It's not just about relationship at home, but in terms of friends or whoever it is, we need to have a few good relationships where the energy is not being sucked out of us, where we are able to share happily. Yes.
I had a lovely time sharing this space with everyone. I must go now. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. What's the time?
8:30. Yeah, 31, yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I had another question, but I have to stop this.
Like I said, I can go on. All of
yeah.
y'all need to decide
no,
when to stop.
I really am curious what healthy bowels look like. If you could talk a little bit about what, if it's okay with others.
Well, you know, you'll have to, you just need to take some parameters. One is the consistency. Two is the color, three is the smell, four is the wind, whether it is accompanied with a lot of wind or without wind. Color, consistency, smell, wind, periodicity. How regular it is. And one more, I think I'm missing.
Isn't the
Did I miss
shape,
anything?
Didn't they say the shape is important? Like if it's never expanded.
That is the consistency.
Not, but that's a little different than consistency. They actually say, I don't know, what I've read is they say the shape because your colon, if your colon is tight or constricted, then the stool becomes a thin.
Yeah.
It should be like this, or something. I'm asking or saying what I mean.
Yeah. So basically, we are talking about whether this, like when we say consistency, we're talking about whether it is hard, whether it's in pieces, whether it's thin, whether it is thick, whether it is liquid. All of that is what I was grouping under consistency. Ideally, the stool should not be too hard or too liquid. It should be soft, it should be floating in the water. It should ideally not be too brown or black or too light or yellow. The color is a medium color. It should generally, a good stool should not have smell or minimal smell it would be. It would be minimal wind that is going with the stool. It's not that. Sometimes there's a lot of wind that goes and very little stool. But a good bowel movement would be little wind and the ideal quantity of stool. And it would ideally be happening every day in the morning as soon as you wake up. You know, naturally, without having to drink a lot of water or coffee or tea or anything. It happens naturally. These are the indicators of a good, healthy bowel movement. It can happen once or twice a day. Even thrice is okay, but more than that is not a good idea. You know, twice is ideal, once is fine.
What is Ayurveda's take on dairy intake?
Ayurveda definitely believes dairy is good.
Is good?
Is good, yeah. I need to qualify it. So, you know, we have to keep aside the social issues of today. We have to keep aside the fact that cows are not looked after well today. Those are social issues. Medically, dairy is good. Medically, milk, buttermilk, you know, yogurt from which the butter has been removed, what remains, the liquid that remains is called buttermilk. That, so milk, buttermilk and ghee, the butter is melted into ghee. These three are excellent products. Milk, buttermilk and ghee are excellent dairy products. Whole milk, We are not talking about low fat milk or anything. Whole milk, preferably from a grass fed cow, which has not been given oxytocin injections, which is well looked after. That milk is excellent. It's a complete food. It has all the nutrition that we need. It should be drunk warm or hot. It should not be drunk cold. We recommend it. In fact, Ayurveda would say that if you cannot drink milk, there is a health issue which needs to be corrected so that you can drink the milk. Mm-hmm. That is how strongly it recommends the milk.
Yeah, and if you can share more about like the mother energy with milk and the context around that.